Welcome to How We Helped, stories from Eastern Ontario social workers. In this episode, we explore the causes and issues that have defined social work across the region. Immediately following the branch's establishment in 1935, it became active in tackling the biggest social issues facing Eastern Ontario. At the time, Canada was in the depths of the Great Depression, so welfare and poverty were at the forefront of the branch's early work. A report on housing in Ottawa had found that lower-income people were taking over older properties in disrepair, leading to slum conditions. In response, the branch advocated for affordable housing, arguing that it would help decrease crime, improve health conditions, and increase employment. A couple of years later, the branch contributed to the Canadian Association of Social Workers' submission to the Royal Commission on Dominion-Provincial Relations. The submission included a lengthy section on relief programs in Ontario, to which the Eastern Branch would have greatly contributed. The submission stated that
malnutrition is evident in mothers underweight, children underweight, decayed teeth in the case of children and young adults, nervous disorders and temperamental difficulties. It is believed that sooner or later the taxpayer pays more for the after effects of poverty in others than he would pay for adequate care in the beginning. Disease and organic troubles flourish, and medical and hospital costs soar when conditions of malnutrition prevail.
Through the Great Depression and the Second World War, these largely national social issues occupied a lot of the Eastern Branch's attention. Members were addressing the local realities, but the policy decisions were primarily federal, so the Eastern Branch contributed to these wider national efforts. Through the 1950s and 1960s, however, the Eastern Branch shifted towards more local social issues. In 1970, the branch established the Social Action Committee. While it was focused on local and regional issues throughout Eastern Ontario, the problems social workers were dealing with were, and still are, universal. In its first year, the committee was involved in bringing the Visiting Homemakers Association budget before the Ottawa City Council, the Minister's Conference, municipal budgets, the White Paper on Income Security, and the Opportunities for Youth program. In the 50 years that followed, the committee was a force in publicizing key social issues and pushing for reforms to help people across Eastern Ontario. Longtime member Marg Nelson describes the committee's significance.
To today's young social workers, look for opportunities for social justice work, for advocacy. If it's not within your agency or wherever you're working, you know that you have an organization, the Association of Social Workers, and that we have a social justice committee, and that you can bring any issue to us, and if we can, we will attempt to work on that issue and to get others involved.
The first issue the Eastern Branch tackled after its establishment was poverty. The economic realities of the Great Depression may have passed, but poverty and income security have continued to loom as a major problem social workers have constantly tried to address in their practice. For a lot of Eastern Branch members, fighting for clients to have a livable income is the first step in larger societal reforms. Joan Gullen.
I did a lot of work with the social assistance benefit. For instance, we developed the bus pass for, that was an example, and some of the benefits for people on very low income. That was part of the social justice issue of having so that people could have a decent income, and there was always resistance, always excuses that there wasn't enough money. Those were the barriers, but we persisted and overcame a lot of those. I worked with recipients and not for them. I worked with them. I would help to set up circumstances under which they could speak for themselves.
From its earliest days, members of the Eastern Branch had been told by politicians at all levels of government that eliminating poverty was a priority. These promises were never met. One example came in 2000, 9 years after Canada signed the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, in which the government committed to eliminating child poverty by 1999. Instead, child poverty in Canada increased from 14.4% in 1989 to 19.8% in 1997. In response to this failure, Eastern Branch President Margaret Nelson drafted a letter for members to send to federal MPs.
There is now a surplus in the budget, and there is an opportunity for the elimination of child poverty to become, in the words of Paul Martin, Minister of Finance, a great national objective, not unlike what we did with the case of the deficit. Further delay on the part of the federal government to take effective steps to eliminate child poverty in the first budget of the new millennium would be indefensible and inexcusable. The federal government's National Children's Agenda again promises to take effective action for Canada's children. That action must not only be coordinated with other levels of government, but it must be adequately funded by the federal government.
The relentless effort to hold people to account has been a primary reason social workers remain on the front lines of the war on poverty. As Lynn Sherwood explains, social workers are key allies in the struggle.
We got approached by the Basic Income Network a few years ago. This is a group of advocacy types who are not social workers, but they are advocating for basic income. So I acted as representative on their group. So we've been involved in that for a while. Last March, we were able to organize a basic income day, which we held down at Ottawa City Hall. It worked out really well. And we advertised it around the community. And we were lucky enough to be able to get a guy from the Carleton School of Social Work and a representative from the Senate, because it turns out there's a small group of senators at the Canadian Senate who come from a social work and social justice background, and they've been promoting this. So we had a basic income day, and it was really successful. We didn't focus it entirely on social workers. We opened it out to all these advocacy groups in the community, and we had a lot of response. We had the Rotary Club, some church groups, the United Church, lots of different people. And they really responded to it very well, and it's taken off.
Arguably one of the most recognizable forms of social work is child welfare. Ensuring all children are safe and loved is universally approved. For social workers in Eastern Ontario, this has taken many different forms. Ruth Brown, Graham Roderick, and Sheila Baslow each took different paths towards the same goal.
I supervised the PAR program at the Children's Aid, which had workers on short-term contracts, maybe a few months, but not much longer than that, but working very intensively with high-risk families, the kind of family where the workers were despairing that they were going to have to admit the children to care. And I think people felt if you can avoid admission in a lot of cases, that that's going to be better for the child. So they spent a lot of time with these families. In addition to the regular worker, the PAR worker worked with them on things like child management, and because often they didn't know how to be parents. They really could use help, and household management, but I think first and foremost on self-image. And I had a lot of hopes for that program too. It didn't always work, but I think sometimes it did. Children's Aid cases they're often so very difficult.
I have been involved with, when I was doing my undergraduate degree, I was involved in residential work. So when I came to Ottawa, I was involved in a residential care for children and youth.
The work that I did in child abuse was a demonstration project. It was the Year of the Child, 1976, and the Children's Aid was given a lot of money to look into new ways of working with abusing families. And the idea was to, the project was called Families for Families. The idea was to teach the abusing family to reach out to the family that they were connected with when they were feeling stress. The first thing after I was made the director, the first thing I was told was, you'll never find healthy families who are going to work with abusing families. And that was the best thing they could say to me, because it just made me angry, and I was determined to find them, and we did. I plotted the child abuse cases on a map of the city of Ottawa, and I identified strong community resources in those areas. For example, the church, the school, or community resource center, or something like that. And then I phoned them and said, could you tell me who are the healthy, good families in the community? And then I phoned those families and said, you've been recommended by your priest, your principal, whatever. Would you be interested in being part of this project? And it went on for a couple years. The first year we designed it, the second year we implemented it, and the third year we evaluated it.
When working on these cases, social workers deal with horrific crimes. But as Joyce Turnbull notes, there are some cases that garner greater public attention.
One of the things that used to bother me was that people almost always sort of forgot about straight abuse of children being very affected by dysfunctional families. Whether they were abused sexually or not was not an issue. It was the fact that the sexual abuse seemed to be the thing that took hold and people were most concerned about. We wanted to make sure that workers didn't fall into the same trap as the general public in relation to the concerns about sexual abuse, and that the hallmarks of abuse were more than that, that there were other issues in families that needed to be just as important.
To help social workers navigate these incredibly difficult situations, the Eastern Branch has proactively provided resources for members. These include counseling and mental health resources, as well as information on how to approach cases of child abuse. In partnership with the Ontario Association of Social Workers, the Eastern Branch produced a pamphlet for members outlining best practices while also stressing how all social workers should be prepared.
Even those social workers whose work settings seem remote from the reality of child abuse may find themselves called upon to make a decision about reporting a possible situation. Friends or relatives of a client may convey information about a child in the client's extended family, which indicates the need for follow-up exploration. Or they may seek information about the possible consequences if they themselves report.
These types of resources have put members in the best possible position to help some of the most vulnerable members of the community. Violence against women has also been an unfortunate reality of practicing in Eastern Ontario. Like with child abuse, the Eastern Branch contributed to a provincial guidebook on working with survivors of spousal abuse. In offering best practices, the recommendations were optimistic in their outlook.
By putting the concepts into practice with those women who seek assistance, the profession can work toward the prevention and elimination of wife assault. There is much to be done. It is crucial to continue to encourage change and eliminate the tacit social approval and complacency about this crime.
Barbara Merriam was one of the many social workers employing these concepts in her practice.
I managed the National Clearinghouse on Family Violence at Health and Welfare, which later became Health Canada. The clearinghouse held materials. It could be fact sheets, it could be articles, it could be almost little books related to child abuse, domestic violence, men who were abused, and probably 80,000 people a year access the clearinghouse. There would be mail outs, or there would, over as the years went by, of course, you can access things online. But we were always contracting people to update the fact sheets or update the articles, or there was the very first violence against women survey in Canada, and to have materials related to that in the clearinghouse. So I was very proud that social workers working across the country, researchers, students could all access materials from the clearinghouse.
Like Barbara Merriam, there have been hundreds of Eastern Branch members whose careers have focused on providing resources for women. Many of the earliest members provided resources for single mothers. For Catherine Ferguson, doing so with the Army during the Second World War provided some unique challenges.
The problem with the pregnancies among women in the Army, it was decided that they should be removed from the Army as quickly as possible, both for their own sake and for the appearance of the Army. I think that was why they recruited social workers.
The challenges remained after the war, with social workers like Sheila Baslow continuing to push for resources for single mothers.
We began to do group work in the maternity home. At that time, I was also working in the family planning clinic once a month because I felt it was important to know about birth control if I was working with unmarried mothers. So at some point, it was a Roman Catholic maternity home, and my friend who was Roman Catholic said, we need to tell these girls about birth control, that they need to have some choices. So the director of the maternity home was an ex-nun, and so my friend said, you're Jewish, you can ask. I can't, I'm Roman Catholic. So I went to this ex-nun and I said to her, could I bring my birth control kit to the girls and tell them about birth control and give them some choices? And she said the same as my friend. She said, we can't do it, but you can. So I did. So I was very proud of that, that we were able to somehow fill the needs of the girls.
These types of grassroots, local efforts don't usually garner much attention. But working within the communities of Eastern Ontario, Eastern Branch members were part of a larger movement, a movement which Joan Gullin cites as one of the proudest accomplishments of her career.
I'm very pleased to have been part of that whole movement towards the equality that women now have. Well, we still have a long way to go, but we've come a long way too.
Being based in Ottawa, language has, perhaps unsurprisingly, also been an issue for the Eastern Branch. The group has primarily been led by English language speakers, although annual reports regularly included a desire to attract more Francophone members. Given the demographics of Eastern Ontario, there is a need to ensure there are qualified social workers able to work in both official languages. Ruth Brown notes how important it was to offer services in both French and English.
There was certainly total acceptance that services had to be provided in both French and English at the Children's Aid at that point. And there were some units that were entirely French-speaking and others that were English-speaking. And mine was a bit of both.
Not learning French is one of the few regrets of Mary Sinclair's career.
There's one other thing, though, that I really feel was very essential, that I should have become bilingual many years ago, because the French language to me is extremely important.
There have been improvements over the years. The Provincial Association is officially bilingual, and French language contributions can be found in every edition of the bulletin. In addition, Eastern Branch member Roland Lecomte was part of the group that established the first French language social work education program outside of Quebec.
Un des grands défis que j'ai dû confronter, c'est de mettre en place un programme de travail social au niveau de la maîtrise à l'Université d'Ottawa dans un temps extrêmement difficile en Ontario, des coupures majeures imposées par les gouvernements Harris, les Ray Days et autres. Puis mettre en place un programme dans ce contexte-là, c'était quasiment impossible à croire. Mais il y a quelqu'un qui a cru. Il y a eu beaucoup de gens dans la communauté, l'Association des travailleurs sociaux. Mais une personne en particulier, c'était Carolyn Andrew, qui est une militante bien reconnue, une professeure remarquable, qui a cru dans le programme tout le long. Mais je dois avouer que le Conseil de planification sociale d'Ottawa a aidé à mettre très grande pression sur l'université pour qu'on mette en place un programme en français. Maintenant, l'historique de ça, c'est que moi, j'ai fait toutes mes études en anglais, parce qu'il n'y avait pas de maîtrise, il n'y avait pas de programme en français, en travail social, en dehors du Québec. Il n'y avait aucun programme de doctorat au Canada, à part de celui de Toronto. Alors, plusieurs d'entre nous ont dû s'expatrier aux États-Unis pour poursuivre des études que j'ai faites. Mais moi, je ne parlais pas français, anglais du tout, avant de poursuivre ma maîtrise. Alors, on pourrait jaser longtemps là-dessus. Qu'est-ce que c'est d'écrire un texte en anglais avec des traductions? Puis mes professeurs ont eu beaucoup de plaisir à lire mes travaux lorsque j'étais à maîtrise, parce que c'était pas mal spécial, la traduction.
These types of efforts have been critical in ensuring social workers in the region are able to provide services to all members of the community. But as Eastern Branch President Wendy Burkhan notes, there is still room for improvement.
Vast majority are English-speaking, with some being French-speaking and bilingual. However, there are significant other languages. In the past, I've sat on multicultural steering committees on various issues with seniors or programs in the community to engage seniors, and how do we do this efficiently when there's a language issue. So we need to incorporate multilingual programming and cultures. For example, if we want to raise the issue of safe homes, we could do that in French and English. However, if we were to expand our language base to include more of the immigrant population, Spanish, maybe Arabic, Russian, we would incorporate more people who could probably, in my opinion, benefit from it. So it's really unique in the sense that we've got all the people here and should be accessed.
The push to expand the Eastern Branch's language base is part of a larger effort to bring people together in addressing major social issues. Another area in which the Eastern Branch has excelled in this is gerontology. Over the years, social workers across Eastern Ontario have made significant progress in improving services for the region's seniors. One of the major accomplishments in this area is social work in aging and gerontology, or SWAG, a group which, according to Beverly McIntosh, is all about bringing people together.
This was something that brought social workers together who were all in our hospital. Social work was seen to be a little bit of an ivory tower, well-funded. We would send patients home and expect the community to pick up all of our recommendations. We didn't know who else was working in the field. We couldn't understand the different perspectives. So having a network where we actually got together and met each other face-to-face and found out, what exactly do you do? We were able to identify gaps. When we started SWAG in about 1987, we weren't sure if we were going to be research, just education, what it was going to do, but it has evolved as a network of social workers, a safe place for them to talk, a safe place for them to share some of their concerns, a place where we can hone some quick educational opportunities to bring us all up to date about what's going on in the community, and easily organized, easily administered program, because we have a steering committee that meets just once a year, decides what the programs are going to be, parcels out who's going to do what over the year, and away she blows. As social workers, we're able to manage something that is extremely effective with a minimum of effort.
In 2020, members of the group, and all social workers who work with seniors, had to make significant changes to their practice in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. Across Canada, long-term care homes were hit especially hard. Eastern Ontario was not immune, and social workers amplified their calls for improved conditions in facilities. As Lynn Sherwood notes, the problems that have garnered significant public attention had long been decried by social workers.
We've known in social work for, 30 years that long-term care was just disgusting mess and that these for-profit institutions were not good places to put your grandma. And to hear reports of, four bedrooms with old people in them, the cockroaches and bad food and all kinds of stuff. And trying to get anyone interested in it was absolutely impossible because they just said, well, it's really terrible that that happened. I don't know why people don't take care of their old folks better, you know, and just walk away from it. Now the pandemic has hit and the issue is like staring everybody in the face, right? And it's going to hopefully create change. And hopefully groups like social workers can say, okay, you want change. This is where it needs to start.
With the public paying more attention, there is some optimism that change will come. It's an unfortunate reality that municipal, provincial, and federal governments are more likely to take action when forced by public pressure, often spurred by tragic events. That has not deterred the Eastern Branch, however, as it has constantly fought against social inequality and injustice throughout its 85-year history. In addressing areas of injustice and inequality, social workers in Eastern Ontario have been part of reconciliation efforts. While relations with Indigenous peoples in Canada falls under federal jurisdiction, Beverly McIntosh notes that Ottawa is uniquely situated for local action.
Issues that are coming to us, for example, the First Nations, the Inuit, the kinds of services that are provided, often those people are coming to Ottawa and connecting with different resources here that are not provincial but federal.
Just because it has been important for local social workers, there have not always been adequate resources. Take Sheila Baslow's example of working with the local Inuit community.
That was in 1967. I was asked to set up counseling and resources for the Inuit living and working in the city of Ottawa. There were artists, designers, interpreters, translators, and nobody gave me any direction. I just had to make something up from scratch. And I remember we had, I managed to find a bowling alley where they could meet and socialize together.
Inequality and injustice can be found throughout Canada's colonial structures. In the past decade, there have been two major reports on the damage caused by colonialism.
Canada has been awakened, the words of a residential school survivor today, as the final report of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was submitted. His words came with a plea for Canadians to take that next step, to take the call to action. The head of the commission, Justice Murray Sinclair, opened the closing ceremony with a message for the boy who drummed in the participants, Thelan Kiknoswe. But his message was clearly meant to travel further.
I want you to sing loud and do that forever, my young friend, so that people will come to realize what could have always been because of you.
Every Canadian must know the truth, because it's truth that liberates, it's truth that emancipates.
That truth, according to the National Inquiry's final report, is that violence against Indigenous women and girls amounts to what the commissioners call a Canadian genocide, words deliberately chosen to reflect centuries of colonial racism and oppression.
Because colonialism is so deeply embedded in Canada, it is hard to change it.
Ani Deshnikaz, Ann Seymour, Wukumakong, Dunjumba. So I am Ann Seymour, and what I shared with you is I'm from Wukumakong, and I'm from a First Nations community located on Manitouan Island. I am an Ojibwe. I'm a mother of four, and I'm married to a Mohawk. So therefore, my four kids are considered Ojahawks. I am a PhD student in my second year of coursework. And my research interests focus on working with Indigenous populations, primarily youth, and I'm looking at mental health and ultimately looking at suicide prevention. So ultimately to eliminate suicide within our First Nation communities. I am a registered social worker, and I've been a registered social worker for many years, and I've been practicing social work for approximately 30 plus years.
Throughout her career, Ann Seymour has worked in this area.
Ultimately, if we look at the history of Canada and we look at the Indian Residential School, we look at the 60s Scoop and the Indian Act, our Indigenous people across Canada have been through so much of the process of colonization in regards to what Indian residential schools did to our people. So if you can think of the RCMP, I know that our past Prime Minister, John A. Macdonald, had said that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. And so basically he wanted all the Indians to be scooped up and brought to Indian residential schools. And Indigenous people were to stay there until they were able to walk out and know the white man's way. And so when we're talking about Indigenous people, I think it makes sense that they would have these harsh feelings, negative feelings in regards to any social worker that they're going to experience, because they correlate a social worker to the past experiences that they had in the sense that they're going to take away their children. If we think about it today, we're still in this cycle of apprehensions. So when you think about child welfare today, Indigenous people, without a doubt, are amongst the highest number of children who are in care. So how do I work with Indigenous people? I myself am an intergenerational survivor. My mom did go to residential school, and she was in residential school for 9 years of her life. She was no longer considered a name, but her number was number 7. So I can't imagine anybody being called by a number. Not only belittling, but we're talking about what kind of meaning does that have for you as an individual? And it speaks to what is your purpose? And it really undermines individuals themselves. So when I'm working with individuals, especially working with our people as Indigenous people, it doesn't matter if I'm working within the criminal justice system, if I'm working with child welfare, or if I'm working in the hospital, if I'm working with youth in the detention centers, or if I'm working with moms in the maternity unit. I say hello in my language, which is Ani. I will say Ani Onishna. So I'm talking to them in our language, and I let them know that I am Indigenous. So basically, I'm talking to my people in my language, and I acknowledge and validate who they are and the difficulties that they're going through. And so I acknowledge their situation, I acknowledge them as a person, and I tell them that this must be a difficult position for you to be in, or I validate this must be very hard for you. And so I think recognizing what they're going through and understanding where they're at, it's more like on a personal level for them to know that I do care. But at the same time, I also provide for them the background in regards to my ethical responsibilities to the profession that I have. So if someone were to say something to me that I had to report, I would tell them that this is something that I must report because of my responsibilities. So I believe having good, clear communication and speaking at their level, I never use language that presents as though I'm above them. I think working with my people one-on-one as individuals, as a human being, basically understanding the same language that you're understanding, I think talking at the same level is important. And so just basically acknowledging step-by-step with them the process of what's happening.
Decolonization within social work goes beyond work with clients, as the profession itself needs to improve its relationship with Indigenous peoples and root out biases.
I think when we're talking about skills for social workers, the skills I think that are important is we have to be able to provide the opportunity of time. I know in my work as a child protection worker, my practice was different from my colleagues in the sense that we would be working with a family. We'd go into the family home and we're expected to go in there, find out what the issues or the concerns are. We wanted to get in and get out. For myself, as an Indigenous child protection worker, I would go in there and I would get to know the family, find out a little bit more about the mom, her situation, or the father, find out what's happening. So it's more about connecting with the individuals we're working with to learn about their stories. And I find that as an Indigenous person, I provide that time. So it's not really like we're on a time frame. Although we're limited within the Western world, we have different ways of thinking. So I think that's a good example in the sense that we have to be patient. We have to provide the opportunity and the space for people to share their stories and being non-judgmental. I think we're quick to jump to conclusions and we're quick to jump on different matters that are happening. I don't think the discrimination is there at the onset within our practice, because I think as social workers, although I'm careful not to paint everyone with the same brush, I think it doesn't matter what profession you're in. I think we do have a few bad apples, and that's not to say that everyone is bad. So I think it's there, and I only say that because we're all human, and I think it would be negative of me to say that at some point I never had a bad thought about someone in my practice when I'm out there doing my work. And so I think as social workers, we're all human, and sometimes we do make quick judgments, but I think ultimately we step back to say, hey, wait a minute, that was wrong. Or sometimes I do this quick check-in with myself thinking, why did I think that? So I think we have these check-ins. I think people who are going into social work are going in there because we have the desire to help others. I know that often we're thought of people with these soft, mushy hearts, but it's not always like that. I think we definitely, as social workers, it's our personal agency to want to help. So I don't think we purposely want to go out there and harm or discriminate against others. Currently, I sit on the Equity Social Work Committee for the National Association of Social Workers. And I think that itself is eye-opening in the sense that we recognize that our practice as social workers is not the best that it can be. And so now what we're addressing is how can we work with individuals and recognize that we are all different in our own ways. So to be talking about that today, I think is progress. And progress to say that we're not perfect, but at the same time, progress to say that we are trying. And I think that's important.
For 85 years, members of the Eastern Branch have been on the front lines, pushing for resources to address some of the biggest social issues facing members of the community. Poverty, abuse, language, seniors care, and reconciliation represent just a fraction of the work done by social workers across Eastern Ontario. The issues are universal, but the work is local. By fighting at the community level, social workers have been able to make progress on these issues, and they remain optimistic that these incremental local changes will have a snowball effect, leading to larger, more widespread systemic change. That was the hope back in 1935 when the Eastern Branch advocated for greater resources for those suffering from the remarkable economic damage of the Great Depression. And it remains the hope as we work towards reconciliation today. The journey can be challenging, frustrating, and draining. Yet every step of the way, the Eastern Branch and its members have always been there to help. How We Helped is produced by Sean Graham and the Wascana Group in cooperation with the Eastern Branch of the Ontario Association of Social Workers. Special thanks to Wendy Burkon, Beverly McIntosh, Ann Seymour, Ruth Brown, Lynn Sherwood, and the pioneers of the Ontario Association of Social Workers, Eastern Branch. Voiceovers by Jill Amantea and Andrew Austin Baker. Music from bensound.com. Audio from the CBC Digital Archive. Thanks for listening.